family. My name is Waikina, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And I first want to thank the South Potomac area for honoring me with the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. I next want to thank the God of my understanding for blessing me with another day clean and bringing me to this blessed fellowship. When I came in, they have the place where you put in your clean time, and they let me know I have 6,085 days clean. And I was sitting there, and I was just kind of got real overwhelmed and real full because I couldn't get a day. And because of God and this program, I got 6,000 days. And it's only through this blessed, awesome, wonderful fellowship program and a God that loves me when I couldn't love me. And I thought nobody else loved me. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you about my experience early on with hospitals and institutions. And in case if you don't know, H&I stands for Hospitals and Institutions. H&I is a subcommittee of Narcotics Anonymous that takes NA meetings into facilities where people cannot get out to get a meeting. My first introduction to H&I was way before I even know what H&I was. It was in this place called 42 North, a.k.a. the PCP unit in D.C. General Hospital in Washington, D.C. I was in there for 18 days, and I didn't know it was a psych facility until they told me I couldn't have shoestrings and couldn't have razor blades to shave, and you had to walk around in pajamas and stuff all day. It's like, okay. And I was in there, and you know, you starting to detox and everything, and there were people that came in and bought H&I meetings. And this one particular group of people came in. It was a brother who was chairing the meeting, and his speaker was a female. Now, I looked at the guy and said, okay, yeah, he looked like he was probably out there. But I looked at the young lady. And in my head, I said, there's no way she was ever out there because she was fine. Beautiful complexion, statuesque, articulate, had it going on. And my small brain at the time said, there is no way you could have come from where you came from. That woman is still here today. And she gave up a message of hope. But because I was so focused on my insanity, I couldn't see that that had the answer to a real that almost killed her too. And coming in there. Now, prior to that, y'all, I'm native Washingtonian. Started using like in the late 70s, was rocking to Parliament Funkadelic, Boosie's Rubber Band, doing Purple Haze, smoking Angel Dust, hanging out in the park, some in the parks, all was well, all was well. Got into high school and lost my rabbit mind. Started getting high, became an overnight delinquent. Just make a party. Because what the drugs did for me is it fixed a broken place. The first thing that I used to fix the place really was clothes. I put on my first pair of tight jeans when I was 16. And I had two little boys follow me around school the whole day. That let me know that that's how that works. That's how you get attention. That's how you get some of that broken stuff fixed on the inside. And the second thing that I picked up was cigarettes. But when I picked up the weed and the Old English and all the other things that we were doing during that time, the place wasn't broken anymore, I thought. But the behavior was off the hook. So I went to Job Corps and got kicked out and met this fine brother and decided I was going to be a mommy and maybe a wife, and that didn't work. And then in the late 80s, I started doing narcotics. And from 1985 to 1990, I did all the things I said I'd never do. You know, I shot dope, I smoked coke, I tricked, I picked up 231795 as a form of identification. You know, life just spiraling out of control. I can see it. Don't have the excuse that, you know, my parents didn't do this, my parents didn't do that, and I didn't have this and I didn't have that. I actually grew up with some advantages and some privileges, and though there was some dysfunction or healthy things, those that raised me gave me what I needed to be productive and successful. But because of the brokenness and what the drugs did, y'all, I was off the hook. So, August the 15th, 1990, I met a man, and we played The Price is Right. And the item up for bid was me. And he gave me a price, and I said, higher, higher, and he said no. And the price was real low. Price had never been that low. And I had no negotiating power. I had to go, because that thing said, girl, you know you got to get one more. And after feeling like a piece of gum under the bottom of a shoe, I slithered back up into the rooms, and I surrendered. And that was August 15, 1990. So when I came in, they gave me some very basic things. They said, Joaquina, don't use, go to meetings, pray. A sponsor was appointed to me back then, because that's how they rolled. I was told to get into service work. So they put a coffee pot in my hand with 3 days clean. When I had about 90 days, there was a sister that reached out to me, and she had actually been there for me from the time that I came in. She started taking me to H&I. And to be quite honest, you all, I was introduced to service through hospitals and institutions through the D.C. area. And the meetings were chaotic, off the hook, all kinds of personalities going on, but we got the job done we were charged to do. But I was attracted to the insanity, and it kept me coming back. So now I got about 3 months in, and I can't chair a meeting because you're required to have 90 days before you can actually chair. So I continue to go to the subcommittee meetings. You know, and I just now, I can just sit and I can listen. So I go in, and it feels good to actually be doing something to help somebody. Because one of the things that they told me was, Joaquina, gratitude is an action word. You can walk around talking about how grateful you are, but what are you actually doing to show it? So I felt good being a part of, because those same people that I would see in the H&I meetings, I'd see them in other meetings, and I'd see them in conventions, and I'd see them in other places. And it talked about the therapeutic value in here of us helping each other. So it was an excellent way for me to get in the middle, because they said, Joaquina, get in the middle and stay in the middle, so when the times get rough, you won't fall outside of the boat. You'll be in the middle, and then you'll have people to hold you and kind of keep you going. So I'm going on, and I'm going to my H&I meetings, and I'm going to the H&I committee meetings, and then I get the opportunity to serve as an institutional coordinator, and I helped out with the literature, and I did all kinds of stuff. And it was the first time in my life, the first time in a long time that I had been a part of anything positive. It was the first time in a long time that I had been a part of anything that I was proud of and I felt good about. So I was going, and then I got the opportunity to actually chair a meeting. And I took a meeting into Second Genesis, which is a long-term treatment facility. And I got to be real honest. Part of the motivation in the beginning of me going in there really wasn't about helping them. Y'all said be in service, so I got in service. Because I was so afraid when I got here not to do the stuff that you told me to do. The only thing that I had a problem with not doing when I got here was to don't get in a relationship. I had absolutely no intention of adhering to that suggestion. None whatsoever, because relationships weren't my problem. And of course, I kept coming back and found out that I need to keep coming back in that area. But when you said get in service, I got in service. You said read the literature. I read the literature, and a lot of it was going over my head in the beginning. But I read it anyway, and I asked questions, and some of them were crazy. And y'all let me ask questions. And when I got too off the hook, y'all said, you just keep coming back because more be revealed. And you were right because more has been revealed. But I start going into 2 Genesis, and for real, y'all, in the beginning, it kind of stroked my ego. You know, but it kept me coming, and I was still doing it. And then I got blessed with the opportunity to go into the Department of Corrections. And I got to tell you, because of that 231795 identification over my head, it felt very good to be able to go in the gate and then walk out of the gate in an hour. And I also, though, had the misfortune of seeing sisters come in, leave, come back in. Leave, come back in. So it reminded me of how powerful the disease is. And it's only through God's grace and this program and the fellowship and my desire to keep me coming. And the reason why 231795 ain't been activated in a while. You know, so I'm going and I'm giving it back. And then something miraculous happened. I started going because I really wanted people to get a piece of this. Because I started seeing the process bless my life. I came in and the power that was greater than me when I got here was you all. It wasn't God yet. I knew God existed, but I didn't know where I stood in his existence. So you all were tangible. When you held me and you told me you loved me, I felt you. You showed me and you backed up what you said to me. And I told you how I felt about God. And y'all said, don't worry about it. Keep coming back. Some people said, you can borrow mine. Some people said, baby, make him whatever you need for you to hold on to. So I kept coming back. And I started seeing my life get better. And the ways that it was getting better and the miracles that were happening, y'all weren't performing them. I knew it was him. You know, in 2.5 years in, I decided through pain that Joaquina is not a dress-up program and a go-to-meeting program. It's time to go inside. It's time to do some step work. Because you're one of them sicker than other folks, you better get you a therapist for a minute. And I did, and I struggled with that because I ain't want to be that bad. But today I'm a therapy advocate. Because I'm so grateful I had women say, baby, by any means necessary, you do what you need to do to get better. So as I started on the internal journey of getting better, my motivation or my motives for being in service changed. So now it's not really about stroking my ego. Now it ain't really about me puffing my chest up. It's about me being blessed and honored to have experienced the awesomeness of this process and baby wanting to share the good news. Just like when you was out there, your buddy would come up and say, who got it good? Where is it? And you couldn't wait to tell him. And that's what happened with me in hospitals and institutions. And I would go in, and women would take my number, and they would ask me to sponsor them. And most of the time, they didn't call. Or sometimes, they would call, and they'd stay clean for a minute. And then they weren't quite done with their journey yet. But sometimes that would hurt because I would feel like I failed. It was something that I didn't do right. But I had to be reminded, girl, you ain't the one with all power. You can't save you. How you gonna save somebody else? You're not responsible for the addict. You're responsible for the message and for loving. You're responsible for giving back what them women gave to you. So it's like, okay, I didn't fail. And then I had the awesome experience to meet a woman at the Annex. For those of you that don't know, that's the women's facility, or used to be the women's facility, on the Lorton Prison compound. I had the awesome experience of meeting a sister there. And I saw her come out. And you know how we say, "Here my number, girl, call me when you get out." And she took me up on it. She called me when she got out. And what, 13, 14 years later, I saw her a few minutes ago, y'all. She's still here. And I've seen her life blossom. And I've been blessed to see a few others come out and grab a hold to this program for their dear life and get blessed. And that motivates me. Because what I truly believe is that God didn't save me for me. I have work to do. Y'all, this ain't about me. My sponsor told me early on, "I do not want to hear you say that you are the most important person, girlfriend, because you're not. Your problem is you've always been the most important person. Let somebody else and something else other than you be important now. And watch how your life gets blessed." And she was right. So I kept coming, and I kept going, and I kept coming, and I kept enjoying the anarchy of our subcommittee meetings on the last Saturday of every month. And then I just got kind of tired and caught up in self. You know, it was like, okay, I paid my dues. I've been on this subcommittee for 7 years now. You know, I moved out of the D.C. area. I moved to Nirvana. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do something different. You know, and I started on my journey of some personal developmental things. I got back in school, and I was blessed to get married with a wonderful husband. So now I'm going to play house. I'm going to play wife. And be a student. I'm going to work, you know, and still go to meetings. Not as many as I used to, and talk to my sponsor, not as much as I used to, and still sponsor people if I'm asked. So I'm still giving it back. I'm still showing up, you know. And then in 99, you know, I kind of went through some things that challenged me. While I was in detox, I was diagnosed with HIV, and then in 99, I got an AIDS diagnosis. And I started having some physical complications as a direct result of it. And it really, you know, it's real easy to say that you're all right with some stuff when it's all right. But see if you are right with it when it's not all right. That is a perfect gauge of where you really are with a situation. And what I found out is that maybe I wasn't as all right with that whole thing as I thought I was. Or perhaps it was time to go to the next level of being all right. Because all my defects came rushing in. I got bombarded with fear and resentment and anger and hopelessness. but thank God for my network and that therapeutic value. Because even being blessed with almost 17 years, I need you guys. And I definitely needed people to carry me through that. Because though I had been blessed to see the process work, and I acknowledged the blessings in my life and how I saw my God move in my life, in that situation, I couldn't deal. But he sent me guardian angels in the form of members of my network and my sponsor that encouraged me and nurtured me and had to pick me up and carry me through that, like they did when I first walked in the door. So, you know, I got better. Doctor changed the medicine, and, you know, I'm still going on, and I'm still challenged now because I'm in a place where I have to take that inside work to another place. When I came in, the women in my life used to call me, they used to tease me about the way that I dressed because everything that I wore was tight and short because that's all I knew how to do. That's what I had to do with my profession out in the street. And what I later found out is that it had to do with my self-esteem and my self-worth and the need to be validated. So the way that I decided I was going to deal with that is I'd buy me some business suits. I'd buy me some professional wear. And I'd switch up sometime. You know, and then that way, you know, that's dealing with it. You know, and I first started wearing it, and sometime I'd feel uncomfortable because I wasn't getting the attention that I was accustomed to, you know. But then I got blessed to be able to start to look at me in a different way. And started to see the Joaquina, well, maybe now that's not the attention that you want. Maybe now you want to be respected as a lady. So it's like, okay, I done worked on the self-esteem thing. I'm better now. And then around 2003 or 2004, I went through this kind of wasting weight loss thing. I lost a lot of weight. And people started asking me, you know, some people would ask, some people would whisper. Some people would, you know, kind of look and, girl, what you doing lose all that weight? To some people, I'd have to lie because they didn't know. But what I found out was that I really hadn't dealt with the inside issue like I thought I had. Because if I had, then I wouldn't have been as broken up about it. So once again, Joaquin, it's time to go inside a little deeper. Why is it that you cannot look at your assets and the things that really make you a woman and be pleased with and nurture and stand on that? Why is it still about your flesh? And I went to my husband for validation, and I tried to shop my way out of it and spent all this money and ran up all these credit cards to fix it. And he said everything that he was supposed to say to make me feel better. But everything that he said mentally, I batted down. And I said, nigga, you lying. You know it make a difference because you're looking at every big butt that walk by. And he wasn't, but in my head he was. And it had nothing to do with him. It had to do with me. So now, what, 12, 13 years in here, and I thought I'd have worked on some stuff just to get there and found out, girlfriend, you just kind of hit the surface with some stuff. So being broken and falling down on my knees in my shower, I realized that it was time for me to go to another place in addition to, it was time for me to expand on my spiritual conditioning. It was either that or go to the therapist and get antidepressants when I chose not to do. Or use again. And I definitely knew I ain't want to do that. So I started going to church. So that I can expand and get insight as to what was happening and how to deal. And to find out more about the purpose. Because y'all told me there are no accidents. Everything that happens in my life is for a reason. So I started going to a place where I could get fed spiritually. And then I found out that every single thing that happens to me is part of my journey. And Joaquina, there is a very strong possibility that your higher power could not use you the way that you were. Because you couldn't get the lessons that he wanted you to get any other way. So perhaps he used that to get your attention. Because sometimes I have to be humiliated in order for me to redirect or refocus or do the things that I'm supposed to do. And for me, in a place of humility is where I'm most willing and open to get closer to the God of my understanding. So I started going in and I started getting fed spiritually, and it's like, okay, everything is good. But it forced me to look at and nurture and cultivate the things that are inside of me. So I'm going and it got better, and I took a giant faith step in the beginning of 2006. I quit my job. It was a good job, good paying job. Been on the job 13 years because it was time to go. And nobody understood why it was time to go, and I couldn't really articulate why it was time to go, but I knew it was time to go. And the husband didn't understand why it was time to go. And the sponsor said, you done bumped your head. But it was time to go. And it was in, I resigned from the job in December of 2005, and it was something in my spirit. It was time to move. And you know when you're holding on to something and you're supposed to be letting it go and you holding on to it for dear life, miserable as I don't know what. It was time to go. But my head said, where you going and you going to get that kind of money and you don't have a degree yet? They've made allowances for your health diagnosis. You've got a good rapport with your colleagues. You have tenure. Girl, you're over 40 years old. Do you want to be starting over? And I stepped out on faith. But now when I stepped out, instead of me sitting still and asking for direction, I proceeded to line my ducks up. And that wasn't the way to do that. My ducks drowned. And we did too, almost. Nothing that I tried worked. Couldn't even get a job with a temp agency, y'all. Sending out resumes. No, I got skill. Nothing was happening. So now I'm real broke and I'm scared. And I mean broke. Broke in a whole bunch of different ways. And I'm scared and I'm questioning myself. It's like, what in the world did you do? So now I done doubled up on my meetings and I'm getting plugged back in because I'm feeling vulnerable again, you know. And I had kind of backed up a little bit, you know. And I got back involved with H&I because what I knew and what I've learned from being in here, the best way for me to deal with the things that I go through is to help somebody else. Joaquina, get outside of yourself. Give it back. Do something for somebody else. And I remembered how that helped me earlier on. So I got back on in H&I and I plugged into the South Potomac area hospitals and institutions. And there are times, because one of the things that's happened, I've been blessed, and I think we all get blessed with full lives when we get clean. And sometimes today, y'all, it's a battle. Because sometime on the third Tuesday, I don't want to go. You know, my subcommittee is not quite as chaotic as the D.C. area, so it's not as much fun to me. And it's been a few times that I forgot to meet. But I go. Because I know I still need to show up. And I know how it helped me. And I've been blessed to meet some awesome women, you know, since I've been going there. So the thing for me today is remembering that I have to, in spite of my full life, I've got to make myself available. I've got to make time. I got to be there for the sister like sisters were there for me. And the challenge for me, y'all, a lot of times is balancing it. Because in my scale to balance and make sure that I'm showing up in all of my areas and I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to do, sometimes the scale be here. Well, sometimes the scale is here. But I don't use and I keep at it. You know, so I'm being blessed with the opportunity to go into the Upper Marlboro Jail. And it was odd when I signed the, I went to fill out my volunteer information packet. I answered my little questions. And the correctional staff called me back to ask me some questions. And she needed to know some details about my background. You know, and it's easy to come in and tell y'all that I did this and I did that and I did the other. But I had to expose myself to her, and for a minute I felt kind of vulnerable. You know, and for real, I didn't know if they were going to let me in. Because from what I understand, their rules and regulations are a lot more stringent than they used to be. But surely enough, they approved me. So I'm going to go in on the third Wednesday or whatever Wednesday I'm supposed to go and do the same thing that you all did for me, which is just try to give a message of hope and let women know that it's a better way, you know. And by the way, that job that I left, I got blessed, y'all. And not only did I get blessed with a job, I got blessed with a position that was better than what I left. And it had nothing to do with me. It simply had to do with the fact that I trusted the God of my understanding enough to carry me and to take care of me. It was a heck of an 11-step journey and experience for me. My error was when I left, I was opposed to toil in prayer and meditation to get guidance. And I didn't. Which is why I went through the emotional turmoil that I did. But it's all good. But H&I is a wonderful subcommittee, you all. And again, I am so honored that God saved me and blesses me with the opportunity to share a message of hope. Thanks for letting me share.
Evening, everybody. I'm an addict called Tim. And having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message. I have to remind myself of that when I get into a situation where I'm dealing with people in a treatment center. because my first introduction to treatment was in 1985. I spent my Christmas holiday in a very nice facility called Taylor Manor. And I hadn't used at that time in over a year, kind of a seat of your pants recovery. You know, I got tired of sticking needles in my arm and being sick, so somebody said, well, why not just stop? And I did, and I was able to do that. But I didn't realize exactly what that sticking myself with a needle had been doing for all the years that I'd been doing it. At the end of a year, I was at a point in my life where I was just, I made the decision that I didn't wish to get up the next morning. And I made a very serious attempt. I have a seizure disorder, and they don't know what it's caused by, but I have a few clues. I, at the time, was taking phenobarbital as one of the medications, and I filled a prescription of 100, and I took them, and I drank a bottle of alcohol on top of that. The very next morning, I woke up to see a very shiny tip of a shoe tapping my foot to see if I was stiff or not. And I found myself in this very nice facility with no shoelaces and no belt and people watching me. And having talked to them about my past, they said, well, we have a meeting that comes in here. Maybe you should go there. And, you know, they'll be here tonight. It's at 7 o'clock. And these guys came in. And, of course, there were a few other people like me there. Who didn't believe that they had a problem with drugs. And essentially, we commandeered this meeting and we turned it into a I'm a bigger addict than you are meeting. And that was what I believed Narcotics Anonymous was about. People sitting around trying to convince each other that they were bigger addicts than I was. And since I had not used narcotics for a year, I thought, "This is, I'm not going there. You must be crazy. I go to this meeting, I feel like using." So as a result, I gave Narcotics Anonymous no credibility whatsoever. And needless to say, you know, I told them everything they needed to hear so that at the end of my 30 days, they let me out. And I went back on with my life thinking that, you know, all I have to do is just repair this little bit of damage that I've done here financially and, you know, it'll all be okay. Because I still did not realize that there was something wrong with me. I have a disease. I didn't know I had a disease. And if you had told me I had a disease of addiction, I would have laughed at you. A girl that really, really loved me, I was incapable of giving her what she wanted. She had a disease called anorexia and bulimia. They kind of go together. And I told her that, I said, Terry, you cannot live with me and kill yourself and make me watch. So she said, fine. And she moved to Arizona. And they found her starved to death in an apartment full of food. I I immediately knew exactly what would take that feeling of guilt and pain away. And for the next 5 years, I progressively went down further and further to the point that I was ready to take that step again. And a fellow addict could tell that day. And she grabbed me and said, "No, you're not leaving this house until you come up with a plan." She said, "You can't see it right now, but it's not as bad as you think. So what do you want to do?" And I found myself back at that very same facility, Taylor Manor in Ellicott City. Only this time I was in their substance abuse center. And H&I for them was packing us in a van and rolling us off to meetings. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Baltimore, but there's a meeting in Baltimore on a little street that's about as wide as the gap between these seats on Christian Street. And I went to a meeting and I saw a guy at this meeting. And he was celebrating a year clean. And it made a very, very big impact on me then. I decided that maybe there just might be something to this Narcotics Anonymous. And I picked up my white key tag there. And to let you know that I know there's something about Narcotics Anonymous, when I went from there, the people outside in the street are saying, "Hey, are you looking for a relapse? If you can stay clean in that environment, I know I could stay clean where I live because they weren't tempting me outside of my door." So I decided to start coming to Narcotics Anonymous, and the first people that I met told me, "Tim, get involved." And I knew what that meant, because somewhere near the end of my desperation, I decided to call the Narcotics Anonymous phone line. 3 days later, someone called me back. So I knew that Narcotics Anonymous needs volunteers. They need people like me to step up to the plate. And I don't like to step up to the plate. I got to tell you. I've lived alone for a long time. I grew up feeling like I lived alone. I lived in a family. So, giving of myself was not natural. I don't. It's just not inborn into me. It was not taught to me long enough. And I ignored what it meant to the point that, you know, if I take care of me, everything will be okay. But I took the suggestion and I got involved. And my first commitment was with the phone line, just trying to give people directions to a meeting. One night a week, 6 hours. Call in, pick up the message, call the people back. It's pretty simple. And then someone suggested that maybe I should, you know, try to do a little more than just that. They said, "You know, we've got this committee, this H&I committee, and we could use someone to take meetings into facilities." And I've done that consistently for the last 9 years. It's amazing to me how my addiction will act on me when it comes that day for my commitment. You know, I really don't feel like it. I work for the last 5 years. I've worked, you know, they come and ask me, do I want to work 10-hour day, would I work? They started asking, would I please work 10-hour days? And I agreed to this torture, and then I started working Saturdays and 10-hour days, and it just takes all of my energy, in addition to having the seizure disorder that I used to take phenobarbital for. I have hepatitis C, and that's a direct result of my using too, obviously. I like to say that, you know, if you invite abuse, it's impolite not to accept it. And, you know, I invited everything that I got, so it's time to start accepting it. So the first Monday of every month, I roll my butt out of the house at 7:30, and I go and take care of this H&I commitment. And it seems like it's almost the first Monday of every month that same thought comes into my head. I don't want to do this. I don't feel like it. How can I get out of it? What am I going to tell Scott? See, then my disease wants to make me use my other illness of seizures as an excuse to not go and then lie. It goes through my head every time there's something I don't want to do. The first thing that goes through my head is, how can Tim get out of doing this and make it look like it's not his fault? Or make it look like he's not trying to just take it easy? Fortunately, my higher power has not allowed me to use that lie. And every time I go, when I come home, I feel better than when I left. Why is that? Well, you know, we say you got to give it away to keep it. That must be one of the reasons people say that. It's because they know that I'm going to feel better when I do the right thing and honor my commitment. And I get to deal with people that are really, really raw. Sometimes I've been in meetings and I like to use the literature. And we'll discuss the literature. The person that's with me. There are times when I've had to go alone. We have NA literature in these meetings. So rather than me try to come up with some kind of a story, which would probably have a lot of embellishments and possibly lies, and I might not even know that they're lies, because some of the lies that we tell ourselves, we actually ultimately come to believe. And we can't tell the difference whether it's a lie or not. So, but I know if I use the NA literature and answer the questions in some of these pamphlets truthfully, you know, I can't make it look like this is, you know, this is me and I'm great. Because I want you to like me. But I'm afraid of you. Same as I'm afraid of all those people in that room. But I learned to pray. And I try to give the best idea of who I was, who I am, who I can be, and who I'm trying to be. to people who are raw in recovery. They don't even know they're in recovery. You know, they might be like me. I was just trying to get, you know, 2 weeks between me and a shot of dope and I'll be okay. That's how I did it the last time. I forgot it wasn't okay, but I knew that I could get off the dope in 2 weeks if they kept me locked up in this place and fed me, you know. I'd be okay. Woman was my counselor there in a group meeting. Was very strong-willed, let's just say that. In one of our groups, I mentioned something to that effect, is that all I really need to do is get this monkey off my back and I'll be okay. And one of the other people in the room said, that's not true. And another person said, yeah. And the counselor immediately jumped in and said, okay. She said, one person just called you a horse's ass. She said, now one person, you can blow them off because that's one person's opinion. But there's another person over here who said the same thing. She says, well, when two people tell you something, you need to think about it. She says, well, you can stop thinking about it now, Tim, because I'm telling you, you're a horse's ass and you need to look for a saddle. And I felt about that big, and I was also about as skinny as this pole, too. I was a mess. But it made me shut up and listen. I need to learn to shut up and listen sometimes. So I took their advice and got involved with Narcotics Anonymous. It's been the biggest blessing that I could ever have gotten. I'd like to say I was in denial of the fact that there was a God. I was brought up, and I learned that there is a God. I was more in a refusal to believe that there was a God. Today, I know, because I can feel the power that comes from the meetings in Narcotics Anonymous, that comes from the literature, that comes from Narcotics Anonymous, that comes from the other people who tell me their experiences and give me their strength and hope when I don't have any of my own to hang on to. That's what I try to convey. That's what I'd like to hope to leave people with in treatment centers. Because I told you of my first experience with Narcotics Anonymous. I desperately do not want to make people think that Narcotics Anonymous is a bunch of people sitting around trying to make each other think about drugs. Because I didn't know, and they don't know. Some of them may. Most of them probably don't. And a lot of the people are in there for a whole lot of different reasons than I am. And the very last thing I always make sure that I say is that Narcotics Anonymous worked for me. I found everything I need in Narcotics Anonymous. There are lots of fellowships out there. Find the one that's right for you. Give Narcotics Anonymous a try. It works. But take the one that works for you. Because not everyone's in there can relate to me standing on a corner trying to wait for somebody who's not going to come back with my money or my drugs and believing that they're going to come back. There are a lot of people in treatment centers, they don't get that. They're like, are you an idiot? Yes, I am. I was. I can be. Very simple. Only takes 30 seconds. You can watch me. I'll show you my rear end real quick. So I try to make sure that I leave people thinking that Narcotics Anonymous might be something that they want to try. And I feel better because of it. when I don't want to go to a meeting because it's late and I'm tired and I know it's going to cut in, I'm only going to get 4 hours of sleep instead of six. I feel better when I get home. And I say, you know what? I'm only going to get 4 hours of sleep tonight instead of six. Big deal. You know, how many times when I was using, did I go without something to get what I needed or what I wanted? Well, I want to stay clean. In order to continue living, I need to stay clean. And my higher power directs me to do the things that will keep me clean and help me to continue living. And I'm happy. Sure, I'm not happy all the time. You know, you would know I was lying if I said that I was happy all the time. I suffer from the disease of addiction. It's going to tell me that I'm worthless. Tim, would you lead a meeting for us at the convention? Who, me? What have I got? I don't know what I have all the time. I know that I'm clean. I know that things get better every day. As long as I keep my focus on things that I do have something, some form of control over, like not putting drugs in me, putting food in me. You can look at me. I can lose weight. I can't gain it. So, you know, that's the way it is. I used to be really, really angry at life because of the fact that, you know, I'm skinny. I'm thin. That's the way it is. I've learned to accept the fact I'm not going to have Arnold Schwarzenegger's body. I'm not going to even get close. And I'm happy with that today. I'm okay with that today because it really doesn't matter. What matters is, to me, is doing the right thing. My grandmother passed in October. It'll be 3 years. And she came to six of my anniversaries. And last summer, or that the last summer prior to her passing, she was unable to make it to that anniversary. And she said to me, "It's okay, Timothy," because she used my full name. "It's okay, Timothy. I know you're okay today, and it'll be all right." That made me feel that I had finally made that amend. Because you don't think that you're hurting your family a lot of times because, well, they're all the way over there and I don't even go there anymore. Not that they necessarily wanted me around. But I'm not hurting them. And my mother spoke for me at my first anniversary. My mother's in the AA fellowship. And she said, every time the phone would ring late at night, that was the Maryland State Police calling to tell her that her son was dead. It was the first thing she thought of. And wasn't until then that I realized I'd been hurting people without realizing I'd been hurting people. And my sponsor at the time said to me that what I needed to do was I needed to work to make those amends by doing the right thing and keep coming back. So that's all I can say is that, you know, I urge everyone to keep coming back and give yourself, if you're not involved in hospitals and institutions, or some service commitment of some sort, get one. Experience the joy that service, selfless service, will give you. This is a shameless plug. I'm registration chair for next year's convention. We can always use help. And it's a volunteer position. They don't pay. So. There's lots of things you can do. That's, like I said, there's lots of convention committees that could use the help, even this convention committee. Go hand out registrations for a couple hours or an hour. Go in and ask somebody if they want to take a cigarette break. And it's real easy to do. And you'll see just what you can get from doing selfless service. It's been a lifesaver for me. I don't know whether it's been a lifesaver for the people that I've talked to in meetings, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We tried to carry the message. That's all I need to remember. So I tried to do my best. And when I do that, I feel better. So thanks for letting me share. I'm out of cold town.